On this episode of Leadership and Loyalty, Tips for Executives, we chat about the power of schmoozing and the possibility of mapping the human communication genome while holding off on some of that gratification that you're looking for. Welcome to Leadership and Loyalty Tips for Executives, part of the Full Monty Leadership Interview Series. I'm your host, Dov Barron, founder of Full Monty Leadership. If you're a new listener, new viewer, thank you for joining us. Strap yourself in. We're about to go full Monty. If you're a regular, there's a big thank you to you for being one of our over 1.5 million downloads and making us the number one podcast for Fortune 500 listeners and consistently keeping us at the top in next generation leadership, human resources, family business, and a whole bunch of other great business categories. Thank you for sharing the show with everybody that you know. And remember, we always need your help in staying relevant, so please go to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. All right, let's strip it down and dive right in. Do you hate going to those networking or even social events because sometimes it feels like you'd rather stick a knitting needle in your own ear rather than listen to one more person rambling on about their wonderful children, adorable cats, talented dog, or the instant money-making MLM that they're in? Yeah, I don't know about you, but I've been there, and man, it's painful. Well, our guest today says that there is a great power in schmoozing, and that small talk can be a highly valuable catalyst to delivering your significant message, a message that you could learn how to deliver and transform people's lives in as little as 60 seconds. Our guest today is Ariel Halevi. Ariel is the founding partner of Viomar. Now, I just want to make sure I got that right, but we'll check in a bit. Viomar is the leading solution provider for interpersonal communications-related challenges. Viomar specializes in areas of persuasion and influence without authority in large enterprises. That's pretty fascinating. We'll get to that. With over 80 employees in offices in Tel Aviv, New York, Mexico City, Viomar is the vendor of choice for leading international brands such as eBay, HP, Microsoft, Google, and Google, but that's another business. The company has a K-12 education division that is currently a formal part of over 300 public and private schools' curriculums throughout Israel, providing weekly classes to nearly 50,000 young adults, thus equipping them with critical 21st century life skills. Viomar's vision is to map the human communication genome in a way that allows for quantifiable and measurable ways to see the individual's communication skills intelligence. So please, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and help me welcome Ariel Halevi. Woo! Crowd goes wild. Welcome, Ariel. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you here, mate. So let's start right at the beginning with the fact that you and your organization have spent the last 15 years mapping interpersonal communication patterns. First of all, why? Because, you know, most people, I think that it's one of the great challenges of our time is that people actually think they're good at communication. Now, I do this work myself. They actually believe they're good at communication, and often they're just crap. And most of us are pretty ignorant about how good or crappy we are. So what's driven you over the last 15 years to want to map that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, my background and my business partner's background is in debating. So we were both competing on behalf of our college, and we kept seeing the same people win over and over again. And we realized there's a pattern there. Oh. And then we see a lot of other people who weren't even trying. And when we asked people if they wanted us to help them learn, they were like, "You can't teach us that. It's a gift, right? Charisma is the gift of the gods. You're either born with it or you're not." We were like, "No, that can't be true. There's got to be a way to let every person on the planet improve their life by becoming a better communicator." And that's really why. That's why we embarked on this.
That's interesting. So you're part of this debate team. You're seeing people win. I guess it is a very sort of normal thought process that he, she has the gift of the gab. They've got the charisma. They've got their way. And very often, Ariel, I think that people will say, "Okay, but even if I learn that technique, there's the certain je ne sais quoi, there's the certain something that person has that I don't have." Is that true?
Yeah, of course it's true. You know, you have a lot, but that doesn't mean you can't be great. You can be great with your own skills, with your own character, right? You know, it's a, we're not just talking about public speaking, right? We're talking about general ability to communicate yourself in a way that's true to what you're thinking and what you're feeling, that is effective in helping you achieve your goals, and that's communicative to the profile of the person in front of you, right? So you don't have to be like Michelle Obama. You know, when I watched her, I was thinking not just how great she was in her capabilities, but how many people must have looked on to her and said, I could never do that. And that to me is tragic. Everybody right. become a better communicator. It's a pattern. You do have to practice. I'm not going to tell you. I mean, the most I can contribute to anybody I work with will be 50% of their achievement. Right. Their other 50% will be hard work and practice. I have not found a way of avoiding that.
But if you could, you would be a very wealthy man.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Very true. Working on it.
Exactly. So what do you think is the one of the, I mean, aside from assuming that some people have the gift and other people don't, what is the number one mistake people make when it comes to communicating? What do you think they fall down?
I would say that the number one mistake people make is that they don't think it's a skill that requires practice. It's a two-sided coin. The great thing about it being a skill is that you can learn it.
Yeah.
And the tragic thing about it being a skill is that no matter how great you are, you have to practice. Even the best speakers in history would practice. When I have to present, I practice and I do it for hours. That is the single most important thing. After that, get yourself a good teacher who doesn't just have a good methodology, but who is willing to adapt that methodology to you and not the other way around. So it's not a one-slot thing that everybody should just do this. It's a meeting between a methodology and your skill sets and your characteristics and your comfort zone.
Now, as you said, this is not just public speaking. This is everyday communication. In everyday communication, our viewers, our listeners, they said, well, how do I practice an everyday conversation? I can't practice that because I don't know what's going to happen.
You're right. I think the first thing you want to do is listen. You know, practice begins, you know, a lot of it's around emotional intelligence. That's another big common mistake people make. They think that communication skills is how smart I am or how high my IQ is. It's not true. It's great to be smart. It's great to be knowledgeable. That'll definitely help. But emotional intelligence by far is the most important component of good communication. And you can break emotional intelligence into two basic components. One is awareness and the other one is control. So awareness is just, do I know to map the linkage between stimuli and response?
Right.
And then control is, do I know to adapt my behavior to create the right stimuli? So listen to others. Don't practice. Shut up for a while. You know, sit into a meeting and stop thinking what you want to say and put aside what you're trying to achieve, and that will create massive clarity for you. You'll start noticing how other people behave. You can learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, one of the key things that we teach in our corporate work is if you want to be interesting, be interested.
Absolutely.
And stop listening with intent to reply, but rather listen with intent to hear. And that is, I think that that's a massive flaw in communication. When people are speaking, you know, I think it's pretty automatic. I think, as you said, it's a discipline that we're thinking, okay, I can jump in with this, or okay, I can steer this in this direction, or I can make myself right in that way, as opposed to, what are you really saying? Tell me more, like requiring more from a person. I'm totally agree with you.
You could definitely draw a linear line, right? Of the relationship between how long it takes you before you start speaking to how likely you are to getting what you want. The longer you wait, up until a certain point, maybe not linear, but all the way, but the more you listen, the more you'll know what examples to use for the other person, the more you understand their value systems and how to get to showing them that what you're trying to get them to adopt is actually aligned with what they believe, the more they'll like you. People love being heard. So if they enjoy being around you, they'll spend more time with you, and there you have a bigger opportunity to influence them.
So one of the things you talk about that I found particularly interesting, and I think it will be very interesting for our viewers and our listeners, is we tend to think of great communicators as being not even great communicators, but people in charge, great leaders, being the ones who have all the control, who have all the authority. And you're a lot about persuasion and influence without authority. Tell us more about that.
So the first thing I would do is I would create a very clear distinction between control and authority.
Right.
Okay, if you have control, you're enjoying authority, but if you have authority, you don't necessarily have control. And I'm sure that a lot of the Fortune 500 listeners that are used to hearing you and listening to you, they may have senior ranking in their company, but they probably have learned that it's not that authority that's going to get them to have the employees do what they want or apply certain policies or have the client buy the product. So authority, control, not the same. Definitely studying the art of persuasion and studying that, you know, when we created these methodologies and we've created volumes of them in different mission critical scenarios, it is about control, but it's a counterintuitive approach to control. People don't associate listening with control. They associate proactively speaking with control. That's a very limited view of control.
So can you give us a little skill or a technique or something that somebody can sort of grab onto? Let's take it out of the theoretical for a minute and just have it become a little more practical.
Absolutely. I think one of the most effective things you can do when you're communicating with somebody and you want to influence them is to spend the first part of the conversation getting to understand what they would ask a genie in a bottle for. And I literally do this. I sit in front of my clients and I say, I'm a genie, make a wish. And I'm going to screw up your wish any way possible. So you better be clear. I want to know what you want. So people say, I want more money. Okay, here's a dollar.
Yeah.
Be clear on the targets. Be clear on the timing. And this is called consultative dialogue and value discovery. If try to spend the first top part of your conversation with people getting them to express clearly what they want. Then reverse engineer into your position, meaning whatever it is you say, frame it around. So I know, Dov, that you're trying to achieve this. I think I may have a way of helping you with that if you're interested. If you get the word how out of their mouth, you're in. And so instead of just coming with the right answer and saying, hey, I know what you need, let me talk, tell me what you need.
Right.
And if it takes 2-3 meetings over a month, it's worth it, because if you don't do it, you'll spend a year trying to do what would otherwise take you 8 weeks.
You know, I got a great example of this. There was a lady who probably about 5-6 years ago contacted me, and she said she wanted to be a speaker. She knows I've been a speaker for a long, long time now, more than 30 years. And she said, would I be willing to give her a little bit of time and help her? And I said, sure, I will. You can go to my calendar. I'll give you 20 minutes. You can come to me. So she comes to the meeting and she says, oh, I'm really excited to talk to you. That's nice. Thank you. Very complimentary. She says, yeah, I want to be a professional speaker. Can you help me? And I said, sure. She says, what advice would you give me? I said, take a shower. And she goes, so she starts laughing. She goes, oh, okay, yeah, but what else? And I said, wear deodorant. And so she's not laughing as much. And she goes, why won't you tell me? I said, because you haven't asked. I said, here's the thing that I know about people like me who are busy and successful. Most of the people I know who are busy and successful like me are actually very generous people. We're actually willing to help other people. But we're not willing to have our time wasted because we value our time. So if you show up and you want something, be very specific about what you want. That lady, although she was a little pissed at first, wrote to me probably about 3 weeks later, and she says, you've transformed my life. I have learned that I cannot show up with anything vague. I have to be specific. And I think that that's one of the greatest, simplest communication skills there is. Exactly what you're talking about is get rid of your vagueness. And because people say, I want to be happy. Okay, I'll tickle you. I want more money. Here's a quarter. You know, I want, you know, like, what do you actually want? And I think it's an enormous challenge for people. And I'm sure you deal with this too.
Sure.
For people to actually say, this is what I want. How do you get them to that, Ariel? How do you get them to hone in and say, this is actually what I want? Because I think there's a lot of fear in people that actually saying, I want this.
Absolutely. I think there's a fear, and I also think people don't necessarily fully know what they want because they haven't asked themselves. It's like the example I give is, you know, you're hiking or you're doing a Jeep trek in the desert, and you happen to see a person crawling on the ground, burnt, dry, dehydrated, and you turn to them and you say, "What do you want?" And they look at you with despair and with their water. So you give them water and they die an hour later. So even if they're asking for water, you have to be very curious about the other person. Whatever it is they answer you, ask a follow-up question. And if you had water, what would that help you accomplish? Now, what I love about the example you gave, Dov, is that it incorporates another really important tool, which is give before you take. And here you are. She's trying to aspire to become something that you're already doing phenomenally well, right? So why would you meet with her? Mm-hmm. What does she have anything to give you, Dov? And you still met with her.
Yes.
So, and she'll remember you probably for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. And next time, if you ever needed something from her, and it's not a quid pro quo, it doesn't have to be one-to-one. It's a mm-hmm. habit. If you get into the habit of putting yourself, it's as if you're putting yourself second, but it's not really, it's not a win-lose. She can be first and you can be first.
Yeah.
You gave her. So I think the idea of wanting to give before you take, and then knowing what to give by asking people what they want and forcing them to be very specific about the actual outcome are two extremely powerful ways of ultimately emerging as an influencer. They don't benefit from instant gratification. It's not one of those quick tricks, Jedi mind tricks to persuade people. It takes a little longer, but the influence is lasting.
So let's talk about that, because you just brought up something that's important, which is delayed gratification. You and I have talked about this off air. It's one of the things that I taught for years, which is short-term gain is long-term pain.
Yep.
Short-term pain is long-term gain. Delayed gratification, the 1960s marshmallow test that was done, I think, through Stanford University, where the kids were given a marshmallow and then said, you can have two if you wait. I think it was 10 or maybe it was 20 minutes. And these kids, then they met these kids and tracked them to see the ones who said, "Oh, screw it," and stuffed the marshmallow in, how they did in life versus the ones who delayed. Do you think it's possible for somebody to get to be, you know, sort of top of the game successful if they don't learn delayed gratification?
Personally, I don't think so. I think there are exceptions to every rule. I don't know how much. I don't know if Steve Jobs was a great delayed gratification person. I don't know if, some people are just so exceptionally gifted and brilliant and are at the right time at the right place and are surrounded by people who are willing to accept them the way they are. So you can be brutal to somebody and they'll still be loyal to you. But I wouldn't make it a practice. I think in general, I couldn't. I can tell you, I was a kid with terrible delayed gratification. Still today, I feel that I have to fight my real nature. But I know that it's a muscle and I work on it every day. And I really think that it boils down to the more you can delay gratification, the more likely you are. So here's the thing. Everybody wants instant gratification. That includes the person in front of you, right? So you can compete with them, which makes you adversaries. And then I'll speak over you and you speak over me and I'll cut you off because it's urgent to me. Or I will use this engagement as an opportunity to let you eat the marshmallow.
Right.
If I'm handing out marshmallows, people like me. And if they like me, they want to be around me. The idea of it's not the argument. It's not the specific topic. It's how people relate to you. If they like being around you, it's not just that you're going to influence this conversation. You're going to influence the next 40 conversations over the next 5 years.
Right.
And that's the idea. So delayed gratification, critical, critical. It's a core tenet. In fact, that's my next entire book is going to be just about that, about the idea of how to delay gratification, how to avoid specific gratification traps so that you can actually leave a positive impact on somebody.
When is your book coming out? Do you have any sense of that? Is it any sort of timeline for our viewers and listeners to watch out for it?
I would look out for the book anytime in the next 4 to 6 weeks. It will be out on Amazon. It's titled You're Not Moving Slow Enough. And that's, you know, that's really the essence. We're in a world that constantly is, you know, everything needs to be faster, faster service, faster connection, bigger food, bigger televisions. But when it comes to interpersonal dynamics, faster is not better. You want to move slow. You want to delay your gratification. Let the other person really enjoy that marshmallow. And what you get is the opportunity to truly impact that person.
Now, I've said for years that as we're progressing, we've got more and more and more communication devices, and we're less and less and less connected to each other. That's so sad, you know, that we've got all, I mean, you know, how many devices you got in front of you right now? Four, I think you said. You know, I've got two in front of me right now in this moment. You know, we've got all these devices, and yet we so rarely sit and take the time. I don't do phone calls anymore. I don't do any phone calls. I do everything over Skype. And people say, well, I don't like Skype. And I go, well, then we're not going to meet.
So, you know,
because I want eyeball to eyeball. If I can't do that in person, I'll do that over Skype. I want to see your face. I read micro expressions. That's part of what I'm trained to do. And I know when you're full of shit. And I can hear it in the tonality. I can pick it up. But I can really see it in your face. But I can also see when you're struggling to say something, but I can feel the authenticity. I can feel the truth inside of it, even if you don't have the words. And I need that to see what I say, your heart and your soul. It's important. And I think that we've got to slow down to take it in. I'm a passionate guy. I'm a visual speaker. I speak fast. But at the same time, when I want to listen, and I think that that's, particularly for those of us who are visual, is like train yourself to shut the frick up and listen.
I think you're right. And I think that the sadness is that the way the world is evolving is that it's actually educating us away from delayed gratification, right? Absolutely. You know, we are one click away. I read an article somewhere that it's the first time in history that the attention span of a human being is shorter than a goldfish.
You got it.
They say that a fish has an 8-second attention span or memory. We have 7 seconds.
Yeah.
So you're on the money. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's a very sad state of affairs. That being said, we are business people. We're speaking to business people, whether they are CEOs, Fortune 500 executives, or whether they're entrepreneurs or small business people. We're in the world of business. And in the world of business, you need to communicate about what it is you do. And right. Oftentimes you don't get that extended period of time to say what it is you do and let people know. That long conversation, which, you know, is wonderful to do. But if it takes that long to get it across to somebody, as you said, you know, they've already swum across the goldfish pool and they've forgotten about you. One of the things that you do is you talk about building a winning pitch in a 60-second pitch for what it is you do. Tell us a little bit about how to do that.
Right. So, you know, another big mistake, another false paradigm is that there is direct link between how complex and innovative what you do is and how much time you need to explain it. So you see all these engineers and architects and sophisticated salespeople who are selling $50 million suites say, I need 4 hours to present. And they dare come in with 400 slides in their deck and incorrect and not effective. I need to delay gratification, but I should never demand or expect the person I'm communicating with to do the same. In fact, I don't want them to delay gratification. They should eat the marshmallow. So basically,
that's really important. Don't rush over that. Let's go back. Let's say that again, because that was really important. So you expect yourself to delay the gratification, but you never expect the person that you're pitching or you're speaking to delay theirs. And you said, you want them to eat the marshmallow.
Absolutely. It's a trade-off. Look, every conversation you have with somebody where you're trying to convince them, think like you have, you know, like in the Matrix, you have the red pill and the blue pill, right? The red pill is instant gratification. What does that look like? That looks like you speaking more than them. You enjoying everybody nodding their head at how smart you are. You love hearing yourself speak, right? You get them, if it's a debate, they're stuck and they don't know what to say and you won. But then they never want to talk to you again. And guess what? 5 minutes after the conversation, they'll revert back to how they felt because the human psychology is so powerful. People revert immediately back to their opinion. The blue pill is lasting impact. You can have both. You can choose instant gratification or lasting impact. If you want to have lasting impact, you have to get the other person to eat the red pill. Mm-hmm. Let them enjoy instant gratification. You will enjoy lasting impact because they'll come back to you for more marshmallows. They love it, right? Now, I won't pretend that I do this all the time. In fact, it gets tiring to delay gratification. So I actually have areas in my life where I turn myself off and I say, screw it. Today, I'm just going to have fun. So if I'm with a group of friends, we're talking about the elections, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind. I'm just enjoying myself being smart. But if it's work, if I'm with a client, or if I'm with one of my employees, and it's very, very important that they want to agree with me, not that they have to agree with me, absolutely, I delay my own gratification. I don't expect them to do it. In fact, I will encourage them to enjoy instant gratification, and that pleasure that they will get from interacting with me will make me a desired influence in their life. I'll be closer to their comfort zone, and that's really what's most important, because I'm not just thinking about one policy or one product. I have 10 conversations I want to have over the next year. I want to convince them on all of them, not just one.
Right. So you were saying that the people have this correlation between time and complexity. So how do we pitch? How do we develop this way to deliver our message in 60 seconds or less?
We find methodologies that were designed specifically for that. We built a 60-second pitch methodology for the largest startup accelerator in the world called Mass Challenge, based in Boston. They take in, unlike the regular startup accelerators that take in 5 to 10 companies twice a year, they take 128 companies once a year. Wow. And they expand it globally. But because there are so many companies, they can't. How do they present all of them? There isn't time. No. So they brought us in to help them prepare for something they called Minute to Pitch It. They had 50 startups present in 60 minutes with voting in the middle. So there's a special methodology for that, and it's not very difficult. You break your minute up into 15-minute second segments, and you build into storytelling. So you have to have a powerful opening because you need to grab your audience's attention. Again, competition for attention is fierce today. First, get them to want to listen to you. Then you have to, in 15 seconds, describe your venture essence. This can be difficult. It requires some work. Then you have to present your traction. Your traction. What have you done so far? Okay. Your accomplishments. And if you're in early stage, talk about the team and the past experience. And finally, you have to end with a call to action. We actually have a podcast walking you through every one of these stages, and we've done it for literally hundreds of startups today. But it's not just for startups. If you're operating in a large Fortune 500 company and you have a whole portfolio of solutions, you should challenge your salespeople. Can they present the product in a minute without a PowerPoint? You're not allowed to use anything visual. You can't show anything. I just want you to talk for 60 seconds. Did you capture the essence, and is it linked to the value the client is interested in? If you can't do that, I don't care if you're selling $500 million worth. You could be selling more if you were able to do a minute.
So can you tell us where they can get that podcast and listen in and work out how to do that?
Absolutely, absolutely. The podcast is on our company site. Our company site is www.vayomar, that's VAYOMAR.com. And in the website, there'll be a tab called Resources, and you can see that podcast as well as other training videos on public speaking and so on. It's all open for free consumption.
Fabulous. That sounds like a great thing to do. I do think that, I know this even from my own experience, that there is a certain ability that some people have to see very complex things and show them in a simplest possible way. Yep. And it seems like that's what this process is a way to take the complexity. Because if I say to somebody, what do you do? And they say, I'm a surgeon, it's vague. Now we're back to the vague. But if they say, I'm a cardiovascular, thoracic, whatever it is, all the complexity of it, then I'm lost. And it's that
I keep your heart healthy.
Right.
That's it.
Right. And I think that it's finding that biteable piece that somebody else can say, oh, yeah, I need that. Oh, I want that. Oh, that appeals to me. That's something I'm looking to consume, whatever it is. And I think it's, I know I meet this with people all the time who are saying to me, I just don't know how to put this in the simplest way. Because one of the things, I said this for years, because I've said it in many podcasts, because it was a huge challenge for me. I sat down with a guy that I was working with, that I employed, brought him in to work with me to help me. And I was working on something, and he said, well, we're going to start with you doing a session. You're going to do a session on me. I said, great. And we sat down for was supposedly an hour, about 40 minutes, and he stopped me. He said, stop. I said, okay. And he said, you have no clue what you do, do you? And I said, not even for a minute. And he said, you know that what you do is brilliant. I said, oh, yeah, I'm certain of that. I know the results I have. It's nothing egoic. I just know that I have great results and I can do it. But I don't know what the process is because I'm unconsciously competent and I can't do that. And, you know, and he said, that's the number one problem most people have. They don't know that it's A goes to B or C or D, but it may go to C, B, or D. And you have to, sometimes it shuffles and you've got to know what that sequence is and how that sequence works. But once you work that out, wow. So how do you help somebody get to that? How do you help them to?
Again, I think we've come full circle on something we spoke about at the beginning of our conversation, which is start with the value. The solution may be complicated, but the value rarely is. Think about an airplane. If I started describing to you the complexities of aviation, how do you keep a 300-ton metal tube in the sky, which, by the way, to this day I don't get, which is why I have horrible fear of flying. It just doesn't make sense to me. But if instead of describing wingspan and lift and physics, which engineers love doing, right, because that's the essence of what they're solving, what if you just said to somebody, you know, I could get you from New York to San Francisco in 5 hours. Imagine an airplane, imagine a bus that flies. How long did that take me to describe? Now let's take another example. Think about a microwave. I mean, think about that. The technology there still is groundbreaking, right? They're making the molecules of the food move, right? But I'm not going to describe that to you. I'm going to tell you, you know, I have a shoebox that can heat your food in 30 seconds without lighting a fire. That didn't take me very long. Right? So if you stop, but again, it requires delayed gratification because when we describe the product, we're describing our own creation. We're proud of it.
Yes.
Don't feel empathy. Put yourself in the shoes of your client. Ignore the solution and say, let's assume they consumed my product or my solution. What did they enjoy getting? What impact did it have on their life? That should not take more than 15 to 20 seconds sometimes. And even with sophisticated billing systems, and I would recommend that our listeners practice doing this on other companies' ventures. Take an air conditioner and describe it in 15 seconds, right? Take a chair that gives you a massage and describe that. Take any invention you want. Take a smartphone and try to describe it. Then, after you've done that for two or three times, quickly ask yourself, now, what's my venture essence?
Right.
The brain gets into the habit of thinking in a certain way, and it's easier to do it with other products because you're not emotionally bound to them, and you also have a better intuitive understanding because they've been part of your life for so long.
Fantastic. This is great stuff. I know it's been enormous value to the people who've been watching and listening. Please tell our viewers, our listeners, where they can find out more about you, about your upcoming book, tap into the resources that you have.
Thank you very much for that. Absolutely. So I think if you run a search, first of all, our website, viomar.com. Again, that's www.viomar.com, has really a lot of resources that are just open for free consumption. We like when people learn about our methodologies. You can look me up personally on YouTube. I have dozens of videos. Some are two-minute videos and some are one-hour sessions. Again, open for free consumption, and it really takes you through a full range. And finally, on my LinkedIn profile, you'll find different articles, again, under my name. So there's a lot out there that you can consume. The book, I hope again, hopefully, fingers crossed, 4 to 6 weeks, it should be available. You're not moving slow enough on Amazon.
Fantastic. Hope you'll stay with us. I'm just going to sign off and I'll come back.
Thank you so much.
We want to thank Ariel for being on today. This was a great show, and I think there's some really valuable little gems in here. And again, I say to you every single time, please don't listen to this podcast. Pay attention to it. It's different than listening. Pay attention. Take notes. Listen again. see what you can do, and more than anything, put it in action, because it doesn't matter anything if you don't do something with it. And if you are truly serious about embracing the kind of positive disruption that builds a culture that develops the next generation of leaders, not only into who they need to be, but who they want to be, while becoming evangelical about your organization, creating 10x engagement and productivity, reach out to me through fullmontyleadership.com. And remember, you get the gift from me right now. We're in prototype, so you get it free. It's $197, but you get it free, and it's called matrix.fullmontyleadership.com. Matrix like the movie, .fullmontyleadership.com. And there you can assess where you're at in the 5 categories of authentic leadership, absolutely free. Go take a look. Thank you for joining us here on Leadership and Loyalty Tips for Executives, part of the Full Monty Leadership Interview Series. Again, I'm your host, Darv Barron. Thank you for sharing the show with everybody you know. Remember, get over iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Until next time, stay curious, my friends. Stay curious about how you can slow down, delay gratification, and become a far better communicator. Till next time, Darv Barron out.